Welcome to Tarat Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Kaf Chet, Chapter 28. In yesterday's Perek, we learned of David's difficult decision to leave the borders of Eretz Yisrael and seek refuge in the land of the Plishtim, under the protection of Achish, king of Gat, rather than subject himself and the nation to Shaul's continued pursuit. Joined there by his family and the families of all of his supporters, David asked that they be granted space to settle, away from the capital city, and Achish gave him the city of Tziklag, thus restoring it to the inheritance of the tribe of Yehudah forever. And from Tziklag, David conducted raids on people living south of Israel who had been plaguing the southern region of Yehudah, while convincing Achish that he was actually raiding Judean towns and thereby gaining his confidence. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1 of today's Perek. Vayhi bayamim hahem, vayikbitzu plishtim et machanehem latzava lihilachem biYisrael. Vayomer Achish el David, yadoa teida, ki iti teitzeba machane atava anashecha. At that time, the plishtim mustered their troops to go out to war against Israel. And Achish said to David, surely you know that you and your men will go out to war with me. Pasuk bet vayomer David el Achish, lachein ata teida et asher yaase avdecha. Vayomer Achish el David, lachein shomer leroshi asimcha kol hayamim. David replied to Achish, therefore, you will know that which your servant will do. And Achish replied, therefore, you will be my personal bodyguard for all time. This is a somewhat cryptic dialogue, which Mitzudat David explains according to the simple pshat, the meaning within the context. David says, therefore, meaning since you have placed such faith and confidence in me, you will assuredly see the acts of gvura, the heroic deeds that I will perform. And Achish, impressed by this promise, responds with, therefore, I appoint you my personal guard. According to Abarbanel, he understands it somewhat differently. David responded to Achish's initial invitation to join him in his army with deliberate ambiguity. You will see that which I will do. And Achish understood that as a promise and therefore offered to appoint him as his personal bodyguard. David really had no intention of fighting against his own people, so the offer to serve as the personal guard of Achish suited him perfectly, as in that manner he could protect Achish himself while not perpetrating any direct harm on the Israeli troops. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, relates two pieces of background information. Ushmuel met. Vayispidu lo kol Yisrael, vayikberuhu v'rama uv'iro. V'Shaul hesir et ha'ovot ve'et ha'yidonim me'haaretz. Shmuel had died, was mourned by all of Israel, who had buried him at his home in Ramah, in his city. And Shaul had removed all of the necromancers and diviners from the land. While the second piece of information is new to us, and reveals a heretofore unexplored dimension of Shaul's kingship, the first piece of information is an almost word-for-word repetition of the first verse of chapter 25. So why is it repeated here, and what's the connection between the first half of the pasuk about Shmuel's death and the second half about Shaul's success in removing witchcraft from the land? Rashi explains that it is repeated here, this Shmuel's death is repeated here to remind us that with Shmuel gone, Shaul had no mentor to guide him, which is going to be a serious factor in what happens next. Malbim offers four reasons for why this information is repeated, which also helps us understand the connection between the two parts of the pasuk. First, in Shmuel's lifetime, no one would have dared to seek out a necromancer, a sorcerer, to raise the dead. For what fool would resort to such measures when Shmuel himself was available to prophesy and resolve any questions? Moreover, when Shmuel was alive, he served as a channel through which prophecy abounded in the land. But after his death, there was no one through whom to channel this abundant prophecy, and people began to seek alternative methods of divining the future. Shaul, to his credit, upon noting this trend, took steps to eradicate such practices. Secondly, the fact of Shmuel's death is repeated here to explain the restored confidence of the Plishtim, who are now prepared to fight a full-scale war against Israel, which they had refrained from doing while Shmuel was alive. There were raids, like mini battles, but not a full-scale war like the one they're preparing for now. Because when Shmuel was alive, they feared that his merit might protect Israel. And third, this explains why Shaul himself was so distraught at the prospect of war with the Plishtim. We've seen him lack confidence before, but nowhere near the extent to which he is distressed now. Thus, says Malbim, his anxiety is prompted by the fact that Shmuel had died, and he feared that without Shmuel's merit, Am Yisrael might chalila be defeated. And lastly, Shaul did seek advice from Hashem, as we will see, but he did not receive an answer. Had Shmuel still been alive, Shaul would have sought him out personally. And with Shmuel gone, Shaul felt he had no recourse, which led him to take the extreme steps that we are about to see. The Plishtim gathered and came and camped at Shunem, and Shaul mobilized all of Israel and they camped at Gilboa. Shaul saw the encampment of the Plishtim, and his heart was terrified and anxious, and Shaul inquired of Hashem, and Hashem did not answer him, not in dreams, nor through the Urim v'Tumim, nor through prophets. Shaul, having experienced prophecy himself, as we learned at the outset of his kingship, tried to achieve prophecy through dreams, but this was denied him. He therefore summoned the Urim v'Tumim and attempted to inquire of Hashem. But as Rashi explains, since he was held accountable for the deaths of the Kohanim at Nov, this method was denied him. Radak explains that since the Urim v'Tumim had been brought to David by Eviatar, the Kohen who survived the massacre at Nov, Shaul had to send messengers to inquire, but this inquiry was unsuccessful. Lastly, he tried to summon other prophets, perhaps students of Shmuel, but again, he was unsuccessful. So in desperation, Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, Vayomer Shaul Avadav, Bikshuli Eshet Ba'alat Ov, Ve'elcha Eleha, Ve'edresha Ba, Vayomru Avadav Elav, Hinei Eshet Ba'alat Ov, Be'ein Dor. Shaul said to his servants, seek for me a necromancer, a woman who is skilled at raising the dead, that I might go to her and seek her help. And Shaul's servants told him that there is such a woman in Ein Dor. Pasuk Chet, verse 8, Vayitchapes Shaul, Vayilbash Begadim Acherim. Shaul disguised himself and wore different clothing. According to the simple pshat, Shaul removed his royal garments and donned the clothing of a commoner so as not to be recognized. The Midrash, however, explains Vayitchapes, the same root as like tachposet that we use today, like Purim costumes, tachposot. But as the Midrash explains that the root comes from the word chofshi, free. Shaul freed himself from the restrictions of the kingship. Na'asa chofshi lamalchut. An alternative version goes so far as to say chofshi min hamitzvot umin hamalchut. He freed himself of the commandments, which prohibit sorcery in general, and the kingship in which he specifically had acted against the practice he was now about to consult. Vayelech hu ushnei anashim imo, vayavo el ha'isha laila, vayomer kosmina li ba'ov, v'ha'alili et asher omari laich. And he went with two escorts and came to the woman at night and said to her, please divine for me through necromancy and raise for me he whom I will tell you. And she said, but surely you know that Shaul has cut off the necromancers and diviners from the land. Why would you endanger my life, asking me to do something punishable by death? And Shaul swore to her in the name of Hashem, saying, I swear that you will not be held accountable. Nothing will happen to you. Mishpitzot Zahav cites the Midrash here, which is recorded in several places, that Shaul, who while demanding that the sorceress act on his behalf in clear violation of the Torah law, nevertheless swore to her in the name of Hashem that she would not suffer harm. This, says the Midrash, may be compared to an adulterous woman who, while with her lover, swears in the name of her husband. He cites the commentators on the Midrash who explained that Shaul, even when he felt compelled to resort to a sorceress, still clung to Hashem and did not forfeit his love and reverence for Hashem. This sin was not intrinsic to who he was. It was not an indication of a flaw in his belief system. It was a one-time incident that was prompted by the extreme circumstances. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Vatomer ha'isha, et mi a'alelach, vayomer et Shmuel ha'alili. The sorceress, who was apparently satisfied by his guarantee, asked, whom shall I raise for you? And Shaul replied, Shmuel. The woman saw Shmuel rising and screamed loudly. She said to Shaul, why have you tricked me? You are Shaul. The woman's scream implies that she saw something unexpected, which scared her, and also somehow indicated to her Shaul's true identity. Rashi and Radak explain, according to Chazal, our sages, that she saw that Shmuel was rising in a manner that was unlike the norm in such situations, in which the dead rise feet first. Shmuel was rising head first out of respect for the king, which is what gave away Shaul's identity. Malbim deals at some length with the question of how a sorceress could have succeeded in raising a true prophet, and explains that, somewhat esoterically, while the neshama, the part of the soul that contains one's truest, most essential self, rises immediately up to the Kisei HaKavod, all the way up to God's seat in heaven, so to speak, upon one's death, the nefesh, which is a lower part of the soul, hovers near the body for the first year after a person's death. And it is to this nefesh that the woman succeeded in calling. And I would add to this that this speaks to the exceptional relationship between Shmuel and Shaul, in that the nefesh of Shmuel remains attached to Shaul even after death and responds to his call, even though it came about in this very undesirable manner. Shaul tells her, don't be afraid. What do you see? And she answered, I see a great man rising from the earth. The use of the plural here, olim, rising up, as many people rising up, is explained according to the pshat, the simple meaning, again, within the context, that the word Elohim is used here is plural as a mark of respect, similar to the idea of the royal we. Alternatively, the Targum translates the phrase into Aramaic as an angel of God, while the Midrash interprets that Shmuel brought the nefesh of Moshe Rabbeinu along with him for defense. Shaul asked for further identification. Pasuk Yud Dalet 14, Vayomer la, Met ta'aro, what does he look like? What's his description? Vatomer ish zaken ole, behu ote mi'il. She said, an elderly man is rising, wrapped in a coat, and Shaul knew that it was Shmuel and bowed to the ground. We may recall here that Shmuel wore the coat made for him by his mother, Chana, throughout his life, and according to the Midrash, was buried in that very coat. That coat, the Me'il, represented the great love that his mother had for him, and the values of Ahava Israel, Avat Hashem, the love of Hashem, the love of the people of Israel, that she had transmitted to him, with which she had imbued him by wrapping him in that coat, wrapping him in her teachings. So upon hearing of the coat, Shaul knew for certain it really was Shmuel who had risen. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul, verse 15, Shmuel said to Shaul, Lama hirgaztani laha'alototi? Why have you disturbed me to raise me up? Vayomer Shaul, tsar li me'od, uplishtim nilchamim bi, velokim sar me'alai, velo anani od, gam biyad hanvi'im, gam b'chalomot, va'ekra'el ha lehodieni, ma'e'ese. And Shaul replied, I am very distressed. The plishtim are at war against me. Hashem has turned away from me. He did not respond to me, not through prophets nor through dreams. And I have called to you to tell me, what should I do? Note that Shaul here makes no mention of the Urim V'Tumim, because that would implicate him in his own guilt of the massacre of Nov. Shmuel responded to Shaul, Vayomer Shmuel, V'lama tishaleni, V'Hashem sar me'alecha, V'yihi arecha. Why are you asking me? Hashem has turned away from you and become your enemy. And Hashem has done as he spoke through me, having torn the kingship away from you and given it to your peer, to David. Here Shmuel identifies David by name. There is no doubt as to who will be the heir to the throne. Shmuel continued, "Because you did not obey the word of Hashem and did not carry out his punishment against Amalek, therefore you are being punished today. Hashem will deliver Israel along with you into the hands of the Plishtim. Tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. Hashem will also deliver the camp of Israel into the hands of the Plishtim." Shaul hurried and bowed fully to the ground and was exceedingly frightened by the words of Shmuel. He also had no strength, for he had not eaten the entire day and night. Malbim explains that the nation was included in the decree because of the role they had played in preserving the choice sheep and cattle of Amalek, contrary to the command to destroy everything connected with Amalek. According to Radak, Shmuel did offer some measure of comfort to Shaul. Although he informed him that he and his sons would die in battle the next day, he proclaimed, "Machar uva'ata uvanecha imi." Tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me in my portion in the next world. Chazal explained that Shmuel was implying that if this time Shaul accepted Hashem's judgment against him, his death would be an atonement for his sins, and he would merit to sit alongside Shmuel in the world to come. Shaul indicated his acceptance by bowing to Shmuel and demonstrating his readiness to return to the encampment to go out to battle, despite having been warned of the consequences. The woman saw that Shaul was greatly disturbed, and she said, "I took my life in my hands to listen to you. Now you listen to your maidservant, and allow me to place before you some bread that you may eat, and have strength to go on your way." At first, Shaul declined, but his attendants and the woman persisted until he agreed, and while he rested, the woman prepared a fattened calf and baked matzot, which she served to Shaul and his men, and they ate and went on their way that very night. Thank you for learning together Le'ilui Nishmot Imhotenu Ha'ikarot, Esther Oppenheimer Alea HaShalom, and Sarah Schenker Alea HaShalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.